Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, producer Paul. As you already know, I absolutely love contrarian thinking. Anyone who challenges a so-called norm will almost automatically get my attention, and that is precisely what our show is about today. Elizabeth, or Ellie Gould, makes a most compelling argument for the use of feeling our way into the success of life. In our very left-brain, thinking-oriented Western world, our feelings are often regarded as an enemy or roadblock to success. Instead, Ellie advocates the power of harnessing your emotions in her successful book, Feeling Forwards, and the notable subtitle, which I love, How to Become the Person Who Has the Life You Want. Ellie is a best-selling author, entrepreneur, and personal reinvention coach who has worked with Tony Robbins and Randy Zuckerberg. I can't wait for our enlightening conversation as we discover how to harness the power of your emotions. Let's bring on Ellie Gould. Ellie Gould, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Oh, hey, Charlie. I've been so excited to do this podcast. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I'm glad you've been excited. I have, too. Let's begin by starting with a distinction you have earned, maybe not even to your knowledge, and that is you are my most distant podcast. The previous winner was from Italy, but you were in Australia, the farthest by shore. In fact, do you know from LAX the farthest you can fly from LAX is to Sydney? Before that, you start circling the world before you do, after you do that.
Yes, and Sydney isn't even my hometown. I actually live in Melbourne, which is towards the bottom of the mainland of Australia. And it's very funny. Anyone that comes from the States or Europe says it's such a long way to get here. But we're so used to traveling for hours to get anywhere. It's like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. What, 25 hours? It's not too bad.
Please tell me you fly business class.
I do. I am very, very fortunate. I talk in my work about having a weird talent, and my weird talent is I meet the most amazing people on airplanes. So I always get excited when I'm flying for so many reasons.
That is true. When you're in those seats, many times you meet really fascinating people. Unless you're playing the introvert like me and don't talk to anybody.
Yes. And I think what I love is every time I say goodbye to a new friend I've made on the plane, they say, I never talk to anyone usually. And I thought, yeah, it's been so much fun.
I flew one time with Jodie Foster going to France.
Oh, really?
And then, I wasn't next to her. We were in the same cabin, and there wasn't very many people in the cabin at that time, maybe half dozen people in the cabin. And when we were picking up our luggage, I said, what do you say to Jodie Foster? What do you say to a famous actress? And I said, are you who I think you are? And she just so quick looked at me and said, well, I guess that all depends on who you think I am.
Good comeback.
And I had nothing to say. I said, oh, well, it was nice flying with you. So, Ellie, let's get right into the heart of our topic, and I think you have so many brilliant ideas that are in fact a bit I find a bit contrarian, and yet so poignant. There are so many very striking concepts, and one of the things I'd like to start with, and I just think it's an excellent starting point, and it's not common, and that you believe you can choose your future. And I'm not sure most people truly believe that. So many people feel stuck in life, and I find that so disheartening. How do you respond to that?
Well, actually, I mean, there's many great thinkers in your own beautiful country that explored this concept way before me. I use many quotes in my book, but one of my favorites is Abraham Lincoln, who said the best way to predict your future is to create it. And one of my passions is to reveal how we actually create our future by what we do every single day. But unless we're conscious that we actually have the ability to choose our emotions and create our future, it passes many people by.
You know, I agree that one of the things I'm very compelled to use in my life is I use the concept of conscious choice, and that we consciously choose to do things. And you are very strong in not letting life happen to you, that you make your life. And I so resonate with that. And I'm wondering, sort of, what is the beginning point, Ellie? You know, what is a prototype of your audience, of somebody, of your clientele, of somebody that is ready to make a change?
Sure. Well, I might backtrack a little bit because,
please,
like many people, fascinated about personal development, and everyone has an extraordinary story to tell and has extraordinary challenges. And like me, many people go to literature and speakers. And I was always very much, I was on the thinking bandwagon for quite a while, that, you know, you marshal your thoughts like orderly soldiers in a line, and then the rest of your life falls into a passion that you want. But it was actually through writing my first two books. I wrote a book called Secrets of Cancer Survivors, and it was after I'd been through my own cancer journey, and I realized that no one writes about what cancer survivors think. They write about diets and alternative remedies, and you're told, and we can circle back to this, you're told to think positive, which is the worst thing you can say. But I interviewed a lot of people who'd survived cancer against the odds, and yes, they did have a thinking pattern, but the idea of controlling their emotions, the idea of choosing hope when everything looked hopeless, when logical thinking would say, look, the stats are really against you, they still managed to generate feelings of confidence and hope, and they pulled through. And then my second book was about children, because I became fascinated that so many books written about parenting are written by psychologists who, through the nature of their work, see children who aren't coping. Children with extraordinary circumstances that really need help. And I thought, well, what about, are there any children out there who are having extraordinary challenges but somehow managing to make it through on their own? And can we learn something from those children rather than relying on children who have to have adult-based coping mechanisms given to them? And so my second book was Happy Children, Secrets of How They Think. And yes, there's that thinking word again. But when I interviewed these children, and they ranged from 9 to 12, and I was so blessed, I had children who were adopted, children who were part of a large family, the oldest, the youngest, the middle, children from wealthy families, children from backgrounds that weren't so wealthy. So there was a whole range, plus all of the children at some point in time had been bullied and had gone through the usual ups and downs of childhood, which can be quite brutal. The first thing when I was looking at the secrets of how they developed their own coping mechanisms and were very happy children was they all told me unanimously in their own way, I know I can choose to be happy, and this is how I do it. And that idea sat with me for a little while. I became quite, in between my second and third books, I had some health challenges relating to my cancer, and I chose to build some other businesses instead. And I keep coming back to this idea of choosing your emotions. And during a very difficult time, I started to observe the pattern of feeling forwards, how you can actually create your own future by how you feel about your present and the activities you choose to engage in. And that led me to focus a lot more on emotion and feelings. And I use the example of a morning routine. I mean, we all know there's these fabulous morning routines, and many of them involve getting up at 4 o'clock and grinding and hustling, or not looking at your emails until midday. I mean, there's all variations on a theme, but the common denominator is you can have the most fantastic morning routine in the world, and you can know exactly what to do when your alarm goes off. But if you can't manifest, if you can't create the emotions to physically get yourself out of bed, that morning routine's never going to happen. So that was the journey that led me to focusing on emotion rather than thinking.
That is an emotional decision, isn't it? That's really not a thinking. It's not a thinking feeling. Not a thinking situation. It's a feeling that, can I do this? Am I in the mood to do this? Do I want to do this? Rather than, oh, I need to do it. After a while, that becomes rote and really not very inspirational.
That's so true. And I often joke that it always strikes a chord that if we could think our way to happiness and success, we would keep every New Year's resolution. We would ditch every bad habit we've got straight away. We would never choose the donut instead of the salad. And we know that just doesn't happen. Or if it happens, it has to be a pattern of behavior. It's not easy. It doesn't come automatically.
It really is patterns. And so do you have feeling patterns or feeling sort of rituals that you use, that you advise to people?
Yes, I do. I mean, and it's really, it's an experience I call total immersion. And in Feeling Forward, and I promise it's not a tricky book to read, but I was
No, it's very... a delightful book to read.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Charlie. But I was, I don't know if this resonated with you too, but I was very passionate about not presenting a book that was just about my story or just about the people that I coached, but there is actually a scientific basis to the steps you can take to create your future. And I go through that in some detail, but one of the most powerful story actually related to a situation where a group of elderly men were actually able to make themselves younger through their emotions. And I'll just go through it briefly here, but it was an experiment carried out by a Harvard professor of psychology. And she took a group of elderly men to a country hotel. And this country hotel was styled. It was like the ultimate retro-themed hotel from 20 years ago. So all the decorations, but right down to the newspapers, the television programs that were playing, the radio that was playing, the kind of food, everything was from 20 years ago, and these elderly men weren't allowed to bring any form of technology. They weren't even allowed to bring a mirror so they could see themselves, and they were told to speak about the 20 years ago, the past, as though it was the present. So, for example, they would watch a news bulletin announcing a political crisis, and they would discuss it as though that political crisis was happening here and now, even though they knew, because they'd experienced 20 years ago, they knew what the result of this crisis was. So they immersed themselves in the past for 20 years. And at the end of their stay, they were measured, they were physically and biologically measured with their hearing, their speech, their muscle strength, everything that they had, all the tests they had undergone before they had this trip down memory lane 20 years ago. And the difference in biology was quite remarkable. Some men, their hearing improved. Some, their sight improved. A lot of them had increased muscle tone. One of them arrived with a wheelchair, or at least being dependent on a walking stick, and they left the hotel a week later walking unaided. And what really this experiment showed is that these men immersed themselves emotionally in the past and their bodies caught up. And when I read that experiment, I read it 20 years ago, and it always stuck in my mind. When I was writing Feeling Forwards, I thought, okay, is there a way to immerse yourself in the future you want to enjoy? Is it possible to create your future but then start living it today? And I found so many examples and so many stories that led me to develop a step-by-step formula. But even we can see this so often in athletes and movie stars, but Cary Grant, who was a very dashing ladies' man in the golden era of Hollywood, he was born into a very impoverished family, and his name was Archie Leach, which isn't the most exciting name to have on, which John Cleese actually then borrowed in a fish called Wanda a few decades later, but that's an aside. But Cary Grant decided when he arrived in Hollywood, he would look and behave and appear as this incredibly charismatic man that women would swoon over right away. And there's a very famous quote that I behaved like Cary Grant, a book, or until he became me or I became him. And he did transform himself through total immersion. So that's what I talk about in Feeling Forward, because what we choose to notice today, what we choose to do today becomes our future. And I think I had fun with you the other day when we were preparing for this podcast. Today is actually the past of your future. And once you can get your mind around that concept, then you behave differently and you make the future you want happen much faster.
Yeah, and it really works with a quote that I've used a lot on the show, that the two are you know, almost synonymous, in that you are who you have been becoming. This is very similar, that today is the past of your future. I like that. It's but you know, I might add to that, Ellie, and tell me what you think. I like the idea that today is the past of your future, but also today is not the first day of the rest of your life, but today is a step toward your future. If you look at what you're doing today, you are preparing an outline, you are preparing a pattern, you're preparing a ritual for what you will do tomorrow. And if you're not doing that progressively, then it can happen to sort of hold you back and be an obstacle and a roadblock for you to move forward. Is that not true?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I, when I'm coaching entrepreneurs who are yearning to make a contribution but also want to create great wealth for themselves, they talk about when, you know, that someday, that one day of the week that never actually happens. And they say, well, you know, when my app is downloaded a million times, or when my product is in all the department stores, or when this happens or when that happens, well, then I'll get fit and then I will take charge of my finances. And I'm like, well, no, really successful people have that done now. If you can't get hold of your finances when you've got $10,000, what makes you think you're going to have been in control of your finances when you have $10 million? It's going to be a mess and you're not going to get there.
It's going to be just as bad. Is going to be just as
exactly.
bad, because you know, I was watching I was watching Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton last night, and there was a line said, the one thing about when you're getting richer, you don't really get richer because your expenses just increase and you're still always in that same poverty cycle that you always were, because you're just spending more, and so you're still worried about your finances rather than, you know, sort of working within your means.
Mm. And if you have $10 million, you have a lot more decisions to make every day about the structure of your finances than you do when you have $10,000. So it's doing exactly what, you know, Cary Grant recommended. Well, if you are already enjoying that success now, you have to get ready for it now. Actually, Maya Angelou said, ask for what you want, but then be prepared to get it. And you see this so often with people that behave as though the future they already want is there, like Jim Carrey, like Cary Grant, like so many athletes and sports people. They're the ones that create their future through that behavior.
Yeah, you're very into sports figures, are you not? And their sort of attitude of success, isn't that sort of a theme with you that's important?
Yes, no, look, I've been always fascinated with high performance and how some people are able to achieve high performance and others can't quite make it. And I love it, because to anyone listening who might not be an athlete or who might not even want to be an entrepreneur but wants to create the future that they dream about, athletes are a great example, because we can all relate to what an athlete has to do when they're preparing to be a great champion. So from a very young age, they have to turn up to training, they have to practice, they have to eat the right food, they have to get a certain number of hours of sleep a night. And they might do this for 8, 10, 12 years before they ever become successful. And then we have in Western culture this idea of the overnight success, right? So someone, I think you, there was a gorgeous 18-year-old who won the Women's US Open recently, and we're going, oh my God, this is amazing. And she, it's like she's an overnight success, and I apologize, I can't quite recall her name. But this young woman has been eating right, training right, and sleeping right for at least a solid 10 years before she won the US Open. And that's how you, and this would have been the future that she wanted to enjoy, that she created, just by trading the same way. And what I love about this example is, even if it's, let's say, an understudy at a show on Broadway, the lead singer unfortunately is unwell and can't go on, and the understudy goes on and is a sensation, the next day her life doesn't change, or his life. They still practice for the same number of hours a day. They still have a structure to their discipline and are honing their craft. And that's the secret. If you behave today as you want to live tomorrow, that's the fastest way to get there.
To identify with that, you know what I'd like you to do? I'm kind of stuck because I do want to talk about your recovery from cancer, because I think that I have an idea, a feeling that has really impacted you. Is that not true?
Look, yes, it did. I mean, I had a number of unfortunate events pretty close together. We had a home invasion, which was quite violent against me when I was defending my two small children, and then I had cancer. Then I got unwell. My marriage fell apart. I had to leave the house. And it was not a great series of events. What's that fabulous book, A Series of Unfortunate Events? I think I lived a good chunk of them pretty close together. So what apart from the fact when I had cancer, I mean, it was a very emotional journey for me because my children were 5 and 3 and there were already cracks in my relationship. And I knew if I died, they wouldn't remember me. And as a parent, that is a horrible, horrible future to even contemplate. So my emotions were very, very strong that I had to survive, because I wanted to be there to support and love my children and tell them how amazing they were for at least the next 20 years. But what I found was the ability to, despite logic, despite the odds, to believe in a future that was very, very emotional. I had a situation where I'd pulled through cancer, but I had to look for a place for us, the three of us, to live. And my property settlement hadn't come through and my money was really tight at the time. And I wanted a place close to my daughter's school, and it was quite an expensive area. And everything I looked at was just really awful, to be honest, within my budget. And I remember one particular house, and it was the last on a long list. And I went to this house, and it was dirty and it was run down. And I came to the kitchen, you know, the heart of the family, and it was on such a steep slope. I reckon you could have rolled a Coke can down the floor, and I could see where the slope ended because there was this pile of dust and dead flies and dirt.
Oh, no.
And my daughter, my little girl, slipped her hand into mine, and she whispered, she must have seen the look on my face, and she whispered, "I think this is a beautiful house, Mummy, and I think we'll be very happy here." And
How
it was
old
one
was
of those
she?
Life-defining, she was five. Five and a bit by then.
Oh, my.
It was. And I looked at her, and just this wave of emotion swept over me. And I said, you know, darling, that's a really kind thing to say, but I actually think this house is pretty horrible. And there is a beautiful house waiting for us. I just have to work harder to find it. And in that moment, from the property search onwards, I switched, because I stopped looking for a house that I could afford. I looked for that beautiful house. And 2 weeks later, I found, and I swear, this sounds like one of those stories, but I swear, I found this house walking distance to the school, two-story. It had a marble fireplace. It had oak floorboards. It had a chandelier in the living area. And I looked at it, and I said to the realtor when I was signing the lease, it was $10 under budget. I said to the realtor, this is an amazing place for a really inexpensive price. Why did no one else want it? She said, I couldn't get anyone else to look at it. There was one other guy that looked at it, and he didn't like the fact it was two-story, because in Melbourne, a lot of our houses are bungalows. Mm-hmm. So it's all yours. And that was the start, and that was a while ago now, but that was the start of feeling forwards and playing around with, okay, if you can harness the power of your emotion to believe in a future that only you can see, just like all those skinny kids practicing basketball, baseball, football, tennis, whatever, that's the power that will get you through. That's the power that will keep you going even when the future seems so far away. But by changing what you believe in and what you're feeling rather than what you're thinking, that's when things can really start to happen.
Don't things sort of happen on, and I'm using the term spiritual loosely, but don't they sort of happen spiritually, or the universe intervenes in that when we are thinking positively and truly positively, and we're just continuing down that road rather than the negative woe is me road, that the universe sort of cooperates? Do you find that there is a cooperation for positive thinking, progressive thinking people than there are just this negative, everything is a roadblock, everything is an obstacle, that if you're thinking of moving forward, whether the universe offers it or whether you are just, your mindset is capable of comprehending it, it is much more likely to occur than if you're thinking the other way.
Yes, I do, with a bit of a caveat.
Please.
So I think we can certainly generate positive energy. We all know people. When I had cancer, I actually looked at my friends a little differently. It sounds a little harsh, but when you're fighting for your life, you get a little bit clear about things. And I kind of put my friends into two groups, and there were heaters and there were drainers. And, you know, you have some friends that you catch up with and, you know, they talk about everything that's wrong and you walk away and you just feel a bit icky and it's a bit, you feel drained, literally. And then you run into friends that I had one friend in particular I relied upon, and I used to call her my vitamin injection. I would spend 10 minutes with that gorgeous girlfriend and I felt like I absorbed some of her energy. So I really think, you know, the energy you put out into the world is very, very powerful. But having said that, you know, if I look at my own series of unfortunate events and, you know, it breaks my heart, but there will be people listening who have incredibly challenging stories of, you know, really horrible things happen to them that may be on a different spectrum. I think we have to manage with events that happen to us. The one question I never asked myself when I've been going through very tough times is why me? Because then that's kind of a spiral staircase into a very dark place.
Yes.
I think we can be we can be at the receiving end of incredibly unfortunate circumstances without having done anything to attract them. But then it's up to us with where we go to from there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that did, and I'm not sure, it was earlier in my notes, I'm not sure that I even brought it up, but did I bring up the fact that you state that you believe and you can choose your future? I don't think I brought that up. I did bring that up? Oh, never mind.
No, you touched on it obliquely. No, absolutely. So, and I'm really glad you've circled back to that, because just to go back to the example of that house I found for me and my little ones, I switched from someone that was really worried about budget. I switched from someone who was despairing that I would ever find somewhere fit for my children, let alone myself. I switched to what is the most fabulous house I can find in my area, and then let's see whether I can afford it, rather than what can I afford and then I'll put up with it.
You know, I have the same experience with houses myself. You know, we would always have spending limits and we would always overspend our spending limits, and yet it never hurt us financially. You know, it was just,
yes,
they were sort of false goals. You know what I want to do is I want to get more into your book, Feeling Forwards. I want to find out what that's all about. I want to talk about thinking and feeling and emotions. I want to talk about the heart of what you are proposing, but let's take a brief break first, okay?
Sure.
Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie and my very special guest today, author of Feeling Forwards, Elizabeth or Ellie Gould, and she just has so many brilliant ideas, and we've talked a lot about sort of introduction, and now I want to get into your book and sort of the strategies or tactics that you lay out in that. Tell me about Feeling Forwards. What does that all mean, Ellie?
Feeling forwards is a concept that you can, if you look forward to the future you want to enjoy, generate feelings of excitement and hope and confidence. You can actually bring those feelings back from the future into your present and then align them with your activities. So it's very similar to, we touched a little bit on sports people earlier, but sports people are taught to visualize whether it's a gold medal, it's winning the NFL championship or whatever it is. They visualize constantly how it will feel to be on the podium, how it will feel when their team lifts the cup. And then they use that emotion right in the present. So what am I training for? Actually, my husband, who is the very patient and understanding recipient of all my theories and stories before I write about them, but he's an amazing businessman as well. And he was telling me a story the other day, which I absolutely loved, which I'll put in the next book. But it was about a team from a small country in Europe. It was an Olympic team. And they hadn't won an Olympic medal for like 40-odd years. So you can imagine the mental games that they were going through in terms of psyching themselves up to win a medal. And their coach very astutely summed it up. He said, okay, before you do anything, and during the day, I'm talking anything, I only want you to have one idea in your mind, and that is, will this help me win a gold medal? So he's like, it's like right from what time you set your alarm to when you're reaching for a donut, whatever you do, will this help my team win a gold medal? And Feeling Forwards is very similar to that, in as much that we talked earlier in this very insightful interview. I love your questions. But we talked about what you do today creates tomorrow. And what I've been reflecting on is, you know, when we're younger, we actually spend or we invest a lot more time and emotion in what I will do when I grow up. And we don't actually ever think a little bit beyond that. And I see so many people, and I coach so many business people who they've got married and they've got a nice house, or they've got their degree or their qualification and they've got a good business. And all their emotions and all their wishing and hoping actually took them up to that point. But then they're like, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to do, because they hadn't created the next stage of their future for themselves. So we talked a little bit about total immersion, with how you can actually go back to the past and make yourself younger in the scientific experiment. But what I do, and I call it the Fabulous Future Formula.
Yes, I read that.
Yeah, that's a course that's coming out soon. It's really choosing your activities, a bit like that member of the Olympic team that had to look at the donut and ask him or herself the question, will this help me get a gold medal? It's very similar to, will what I'm doing today, A, help me create the future I want, but B, would I actually be doing it when I got there? So let's say your dream future is to have your own online business or to generate money from a hobby. Let's leave sports aside for a while. So if you are running that online business, and if it's successful to the degree that you want it to, will you actually be spending 3 hours watching Netflix every day? And the answer is probably not. You'll be spending those 3 hours on your business. So what the Fabulous Future Formula does is develop a framework by you actually incorporate the behavior you will be displaying when you have the future you want into the present to make that future happen faster.
I so agree, because I'm in the process right now. I'm in the process of perhaps getting back into coaching just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't want I don't want a boatload of clients. As a matter of fact, two or three clients is all I can handle. That is, that just is, you know, as a retired guy, I just want to be able to impact the lives of certain kind of people. I have an audience that I'm looking for, but I'm not precisely sure on who in particular would meet that audience, but I know, and I have a coach that I'm working with who deals in this area and is confirming that I have a lot to offer and that this is an ideal goal for me and we're working for it. Yet, you know what, Ellie, I don't know who the clientele will be. I kind of have an idea of a stick figure of that clientele, but I don't have any names in mind. Mm. And you know what she has me doing right now? You know, because I don't know if we talked about it, but I've got a bit of a spiritual background in me and a bit of my mother tongue is Christianity, and she has me praying for my next client. Mm. Not praying that they will come to me. It's not praying that I would get this client, but I'm praying for the health, the well-being, and the advancement of this person and how I might contribute to that. So it's like I have an unknown selected client that I am actively considering on a regular basis of what would might be the best life for them. And that's a unique approach for me. Do you have any ideas about that kind of approach? I like it, but I wonder what you think.
I actually love it because that's a version of feeling forwards in itself. Because, we can do a really fun visualization exercise together for the listeners if we have time. But
of course,
really, with that example, so if while you're praying, you can imagine how grateful the future client is for the transformation you've been able to inspire in them, that's the future that you want to create. That's the life you want to have.
You nailed it.
If we work backwards from that, so you think, okay, this, I'm going to have this incredible client. I'm going to transform their life. In what way? We don't need to worry about that because that's what they will bring to this picture. But then it's like, okay, to be able to deliver that transformation, what do I have to do now? So then you prepare for the client, and that's the part of the feeling forwards process. So you might think, and I don't know, I'm just tossing ideas here, this is so interesting, but you might have to reorganize your study, for example, to create a more inviting space for your client. You might want to change your Zoom background. You might want to develop a journal that's specifically tailored to your methodology. So when you do, this client does come to you, and I always say, don't worry about how, because we get so fixed on how something's going to happen, we cut ourselves off to all sorts of possibilities. Then when the client appears, you'll be ready for them, and you would have created the future you want to enjoy.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting process, Ellie, because the process, I've been an executive coach for 25 years, but this is a very different process. This is, I've been executive coach in the business arena. And so, you know, that is typically, you know, some sort of behavioral mitigation, you know, trying to help this person improve in a certain area. And I'm not necessarily after that. What I'm looking for is, what makes this person tick? What does this person love to do? What are they good at? What are the obstacles? What's getting in the way? And sort of removing those, but with the whole intention is to help this person be more fulfilled in their life rather than being, okay, I'm better with disgruntled people. You know, it's not that. And so it's a whole new process for me that is, I like your idea of journaling, what that looks like. I think that's very helpful. Now, I'm very interested. I'm looking at our time here. I'm very interested anytime you have I'm a guinea pig. Anytime you want to put me through a guinea pig situation, I'm very happy to do that, and actually I would like to do that, but I think we would be remiss if we did not talk, and I don't know if this has to do with hemispheric brain thought or whatever, but your really astute opinions about the difference or the needs for thinking and feeling. It's not necessarily thinking versus feeling, but that we live only in the thinking world and have sort of underplayed the feeling world. And yet you are saying things that I wrote down these things here and tell me if they're right. Emotions are not the enemy. Emotions keep you from falling apart. You can choose your emotions. Your feelings do not have to take control over you. There are very different thoughts about feelings that, you know, feelings are almost viewed negatively, except for the exciting feelings.
Mm. Yes, look, and the interesting thing is, in the latest neurocognitive research, it's been shown that a feeling, a thought, and a choice are actually simultaneous. So for a long time, which I think bolstered up this idea that thinking and logic will save us, for a long time it was thought that we had a thought first, and then we chose a feeling associated with that thought, and then made an action. But actually, it's been shown in the brain now, if anyone interested, Dr. Caroline Leaf has done some incredible work in this area, but it's actually simultaneous. So we are physically and mentally, or in terms of mentally using our brain and our mind, capable of choosing a thought and a feeling equally easily. However, that's not what we are used to doing. But I'll give you a really accessible example, which I'm hoping may have happened to many of your listeners and maybe even yourself. Let's say you're taking a lunch break and you run into an old friend in the street, and they're a friend that you kind of, they're not a super close friend, but you feel warmly enough about them that you stop and say hello and you haven't seen them for ages. And so you start going through the usual questions. Hi, how are you? How's your family? What are you doing now? And as you're running through these questions, you see your friend kind of shuffling from foot to foot and looking a bit restless. And you say goodbye, you finish your conversation, say goodbye and walk away. And you think, you know, I'm not sure they were actually that pleased to see me. And immediately your mind goes back, and as our mind is our servant, mind goes back and finds all these examples of times maybe that person either let you down or didn't do what you think they should. Maybe they said they'd show up at a party and they didn't. And your emotions start to become quite negative, and you feel negatively about that person, and you think, oh, okay, well, shouldn't have spent so much time saying hello, whatever. And you don't pay too much notice to the encounter, but then you run into another mutual friend a bit later, and you say, yeah, ran into so-and-so the other day, but they seemed a bit off. And your mutual friend says, oh, my God, they are having the hardest time. Their brother is really unwell. They've had to take over the family business. They've got two young kids, and they're going through an incredibly tough time. And your mind immediately goes back to that encounter, and then you see the encounter very differently. You remember that they looked a little thinner, that there were lines around their eyes, and you remember that although they seemed restless during the conversation, that they hugged you at the end and said it was really great to see you. And then you feel as though, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry for that friend. I must do something to help. And with those different feelings, I call it feeling backwards, but with those different feelings, you actually make decisions that will change the future, because you think, wow, what can I do to help them? Perhaps I can drop some food off. Perhaps I can volunteer to drive their brother to hospital, whatever. And that different pattern of emotions, which you chose by what you remembered or what you chose to notice, actually change the future about how you're going to treat that friend, and could affect your own future as well. But another way of describing it, and perhaps your listeners can do this when they've got a moment, but take any day of the week, and it could be today, it could be yesterday, draw a picture down, draw a line down the middle of a piece of paper, and you can, what you choose to notice, what you choose to feel, will absolutely change your day. You can choose to have emotions that everything has gone wrong, or that, well, this is an unexpected, you know, my car's broken down. Wow, I've always thought that I needed some more time to sit and do nothing, and the universe has delivered it to me, just quite not quite in the way I wanted. But we can, how we treat situations and circumstances that happened, how we choose to feel about them, really becomes one person's crisis becomes someone else's opportunity. The event is exactly the same. In my example, the event of running into an old friend was exactly the same, but the emotions were different, and that's how you can create the future that you want.
It has a lot to do with perspective too, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's why you find some people become just lucky all the time. I don't know if it's the same in your country, but in our country they do the stats on big lottery wins. And there are a number of people that will win 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And at even bigger odds than winning just once, because they have a certain perspective, a certain energy, and it's not quite as simplistic as glass half full and glass half empty, but if what you do today creates tomorrow, if you choose to look at today with all its ups and downs as an incredibly amazing day rather than a day where nothing went quite right, well, then that will flow on into your future. I often say to people that are learning this concept that, well, if you take today and multiply it by 365, that is going to be your life 1 year from now. Is that actually what you want?
Great question. You know, I was told by a person one time, encountering a person that doesn't treat you the way you might expect or treats you negatively, the bad question is, and which is the common question, is how in the world could he do that? Mm-hmm. The better question is, what happened to him to make him behave this way? And I like that a lot. You know, why is, you know, assuming there's something negative going on, but what happened to this person that has caused them? And it's like your friend who was undergoing difficulty. The first question is, why are they doing that? They must be a jerk. They don't like me. They're, you know, I'm not as good a friend. Rather than, what has happened to this person? Well, this person is going through some very difficult times. And so they are having a hard time processing life as it is. And I think it's questions like those that help us understand other people even better. And you have something, and I want to talk to you much longer, but we are approaching an hour. And I'm, who knows, I may go longer. But I like when I was studying, oh gosh, I looked up, I downloaded your website on the 5 questions, was it not? The 5 questions about life. You focus a lot on to-do lists. I mean, I don't know a lot, but the first 2 or 3 questions. And I thought there were brilliant insights, Ellie, on to-do lists are so short-term and so drudgerous that there is no joy. You know, I look at my to-do list and I just can't wait to check things off so I don't have to worry about them anymore. You have a very different idea on that.
Yes, because to-do lists never kind of get shorter, do they? No matter how much you cross off, they seem to grow at the other end. And although, you know, I keep lists myself, I think of them a little differently, because the challenge with a to-do list is you never, it can feel quite overwhelming, and it can feel as though you're never doing enough, which is always a doing state is always less satisfying than a being state. But I wrote a blog a little while ago, which will be on my website soon, called 3 Ways to Feel More Confident Before You Get Out of Bed. And the first is to replay what I have a call a highlight reel. So instead of focusing with your to-do list at the end of the day, because our brain is a bit like a computer. If we leave a tab open on our computer when we close the lid, it's the first one to flash up the next morning when our mind is the same. So instead of so many people, breaks my heart, go to bed thinking about everything they didn't get done, it's to create a little highlight reel in your mind of everything you did get done that day. Because we all know that things crop up that were never going to be on the to-do list, that are either domestic or personal or business situations that you couldn't have foreseen, and you deal with them, but it never makes it onto the to-do list, so you feel inadequate. But if you have a highlight reel focusing on everything you did get done and everything you are proud of, well, those emotions of expectant of things are going to be amazing and expecting to be able to choose the way the day will turn out according to how you feel about it is a much more effective way of managing the emotions around a to-do list rather than feeling daunted and or as I call it, drowning in your to-do list at the end of the day.
I really believe in positive thinking, but this is not some trivial positive thinking methodology. You have a very thoughtful process and a very helpful process that I want to encourage our listeners to get your book and to go. You know, I've got your website here at elizabethgould.com, and they can access all sorts of different teachings and different learnings. You said you wanted to put me through a little process. Is that a long process or is that a short process?
I can summarize it. It's in more detail in the book, but it just on the topic of visualization, because I can maybe surmise that a lot of listeners will be thinking about, well, how do I visualize using emotion? Many people visualize, and it's like it's only once you look back on it, visualize as though they're looking at themselves like they're in a movie. It's like a strange, grainy kind of black and white documentary style. If you ask someone, for example, to visualize winning an Olympic gold medal, it's like they're a shadowy figure in the distance and they see the crowds and whatever else. But one of the great tools about feeling forwards is visualizing seeing through your own eyes. So if you do the exercise two ways, but the second time you do it as though you closing your eyes, you can feel your foot stepping onto the podium. You look out at the audience through your own eyes. You feel your head go down and the weight of the medal around your neck. And then you see the crowd pouring your name and hear the national anthem. And that's one of the exercises we use in feeling forwards when you're not only thinking about the future you want to enjoy, but you're actually feeling it before it happens. So you'll have to get back to me, Charlie. Have a play with that when you've got a few moments, and I'd be interested to know. I've had my clients say it's like a 10x experience of visualization doing it that way.
Oh, well, I want to find out more, and I do want to do... Tell me, are you ready to do a promo for your upcoming TV show, or do you want to hold off on that?
Oh, yes, please. I'm super excited. We were talking about being in Orange County, California, and so I haven't been to... I've been to LA, but not that part of California before, so I'm super excited. So I'm appearing on a show called 2 Minute Drill, which is already shown a couple of seasons. It's on Amazon Prime with the Bloomberg TV network, and I will be a guest host on an episode in the third season. But David Meltzer, who's the host of that program, is not only an incredible guy and philanthropist, his goal is to make over a billion people happy, but he's hosting the show. He used to be CEO of the agency that Jerry Maguire was, movie was inspired by, but incredible human and really a successful and astute business person. So your listeners can dive into the show now, but I'll be there in January to do a taping of an episode.
And then when will it air? Will it be like a year?
No, it'll be within a month, 6 weeks.
Oh,
It'll be pretty quick turnaround. So if I can get any more details to you, we can pop them in the show notes.
Yeah, we can pop them in the show notes and we'll get a chance to meet when you're in Orange County. We'll set up something. And that would be...
I'd love to.
That'd be totally delightful. Well, Ellie Gould, you're so fascinating, so insightful, and I love the contrarian, the new thought, the different thought. This is not, you know, you're not coming up with the same old, and I, I so appreciate that. I think you have so much to offer. And I will make sure that we have your website, your book on the show notes so folks can get in touch with you. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Oh, it's been a blast, Charlie. And thank you so much for really insightful questions. It's been so much fun. We could do another hour of this, you know.
We could. And when you come to Orange County, we will. And then maybe we'll do another podcast. Maybe we'll do a live podcast.
Fantastic. I'd love that.
That'd be great. Okay. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. It's been a delight having you. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now. Oh, and by the way, Ellie, hang in.